am so sick of the media dictating the terms of the narrative in this country. I'm so sick of having to be apologetic for who I am. I'm so sick of people in middle America being called a flyover country or slope-headed.
Conservative teabaggers.
It's going to be teabagging day.
It's hard to talk when you're teabagging. Appreciate it very much.
It's so funny because the teabaggers, the one thing they hate is when you call them racist.
If racism is not the whole of the Tea Party, it is in its heart.
The hatred that Timothy McVeigh, that he had. There are plenty of people like that right now.
Lots of.
I think you get the general tenor of this. It's anti-government, since this is highly promoted by the right-wing conservative network, Fox.
The left pits people against each other. Divide and conquer is the strategy. I don't want to live in that world. It is the exact opposite of E Pluribus Unum. And what the left has stood for with political correctness is to try and get those with whom they disagree to shut up. And the Tea Party movement and Sarah Palin and Michelle Bachmann and Alan West and all the people that have gone out there against the mainstream media and said, you're going to call us racist? You're going to call us potential Timothy McVeighs? Fuck you. War.
Good morning. Good morning and welcome to Road Warrior Radio. You're tuned in live this Monday, March 15th, 2021 on the one and only Republic Broadcasting Network. And as always, thanks for coming along for the ride. And, you know, welcome to the broadcast that is the antidote to the aforementioned. We're not really anti anything because, well, again, when you start doing that, it seems like before you know it, you become what you despise, as they say. So the antidote, and you know, speaking of the antidote, we need to be careful. We play that intro. It's definitely harsh, I would say. Borderline, not family friendly. And so, you know, the last thing you want to do is become a Marxist while you're fighting Marxism. That is an intended consequence, actually. That's part of the collateral damage of Marxism. You know, everyone must fight. So, you know, I think of reminders like Jude saying even when the Archangel Michael was arguing with the devil about the body of Moses, he did not pronounce against the devil a railing accusation. Instead, he said, the Lord rebuke you. And, you know, when you understand the chain of command, so to speak, in the heavenlies, that's quite a statement. You know, this is a guy who is respecting authority and chain of command, an angel, I guess. But, you know, it's for someone in that high a position of power and authority to maintain the chain of command, so to speak, and respect for the chain of command speaks volumes, I think. And so in similar fashion, you know, today is the 15th. Some people read through the book of Proverbs, one proverb a day, which on a 31-day month, like March, for example, and it's the beware the Ides of March. But, you know, on a 31-day month, that gets you through the book of Proverbs, one proverb a day. And you conclude with Proverbs 31, which was a very interesting portrait of a lady But Proverbs 15 opens with these words: a gentle answer turns away wrath, but a harsh word stirs up anger. So the last thing you want to do is be stirring up anger. And there's a lot of that going on these days, that's for sure. It's easy to fall into that. The tongue of the wise makes knowledge acceptable, but the mouth of fools spouts folly. And it's interesting. Well, verse 3 says, the eyes of the Lord are in every place, watching the evil and the good. But again, verse 4, a soothing tongue is a tree of life, but perversion in it crushes the spirit. And so Proverbs in particular is replete with examples of, you know, what the mouth and the tongue are capable of. And it's no small thing. Verse 14 of Proverbs 15, the mind of the intelligent seeks knowledge, but the mouth of fools feeds on folly. So that's just kind of an example. And so maybe one other example. Maybe two. Proverbs 11:23. The desire of the righteous is only good, but the expectation of the wicked is wrath. This is an interesting concept that again is echoed throughout the Bible. For example, Proverbs 10:24, what the wicked fears will come upon him, but the desire of the righteous will be granted. And so this sort of gets to the heart of what I've called the seismic shift in this broadcast, away from, for years, more than a decade, I've focused on fleshing out the problems that we face in a variety of ways and kind of where the general direction of where those problems originate, from what general direction they originate. And I would say largely to no avail. And so my position is that, I believe the Bible and the author of it, the one who inspired those 66 books by 40 authors. And I think it's a love letter to all of us, each one of us individually. It's new every day, every moment. And he is powerful enough to get a message to any one of us in any time, in any way he sees fit. You know, you can be in the belly of a whale, or, you know, your donkey can talk to you, as an example. And so the author of, all of these things, the author of creation probably has a better handle on the problem and what to do about it. And so I've circled back around and sort of focused on that, and haven't really heard any negative feedback on that. Nobody seems to have taken issue with that. I sort of anticipated it in this modern technocratic era. And it's interesting, technocracy is a funny thing. We hear Jeremy Rifkin, for example, the zero marginal cost society. Technocracy just makes things better. We get to a point where we can make things at zero marginal cost. The Internet of Things, the collaborative commons, and the eclipse of capitalism. But really what it is a way to control people even more. If technocracy worked the way, if it worked as advertised, then Scotty Kilmer wouldn't be a YouTube sensation. He wouldn't be making videos about how new Chevy trucks are awful and not as good as Chevy trucks made 25 or 30 years ago in America entirely, or largely anyway. You know, we wouldn't have the light bulb conspiracy. And speaking of that and automobiles, isn't it funny how the household light bulb you see on the package, it lasts about 2,000 hours, which is probably, you know, that's about a year. It says so on the package, 2,000 to 2,500 hours. And yet the automobile contains bulbs that will last forever. Yeah, but Chris, we don't, you know, those don't, they aren't on all the time. Like, you don't have your headlights on all the time. Actually, most of the headlights these days are on all the time. And some of the lights are on all the time. For example, think of your instrument cluster or your dash lights. Those are on all the time when you're driving. And they last for years and years and years and years. In fact, when was the last time anybody changed a light bulb in the dash or instrument cluster? Very, very seldom. So they're lasting more than 2,000 hours. So why don't we, you know, why don't we make them, why don't we make household bulbs the same? Well, you know, it's different filament manufacturing. Well, why don't we do them all that way? It's a direct current, and therefore, no, 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 no. If technocracy worked as advertised, then we wouldn't see these kinds of issues. We wouldn't see planned obsolescence. You know, your cell phone would get better, and you'd probably buy one automobile for life. That's what we used to do. We used to, the older cars were collectibles, and now, you know, the automobiles that were collectibles in the 50s, gosh, they just seem like, you know, that seems like a million years ago. And slowly but surely, you know, we're seeing, you know, 20 years ago when the internet was still fairly young, it was a great place, you know, these forums and little chat things where experts would share expertise, and they would, you know, it gave rise to, I don't know, if you want to say Darwinian natural selection and the technocratic collaborative commons, you know, gave rise to these little enclaves where you could find great information and come up to speed really, really quickly if you happen to be an aficionado. For example, maybe you acquired a Sunbeam Tiger and you know, one of Carroll Shelby's race cars, basically. And, you know, it's a unique kind of a vehicle. And so you want to come up to speed, be able to work on it, get parts for it and stuff like that. You could find those kinds of things on the internet really quickly. And, you know, car clubs and things like that. But that is all kind of being whittled away. And big tech is at the forefront of doing that. You know, you want to make sure that there is always, you know, some talk of safety and security. You don't want to be a part of something that's not secure. And, you know, so everyone has to have big tech platforms and things like that. And we can't just have these simple little forums and things anymore. And a lot of the parts are getting more difficult to find a thing. So anyway, if technocracy worked as advertised, things would be getting better. Those kinds of things would be getting better. And the gadgets that we have now would not seem gimmicky and faddish. You know, speaking of cars, if you've looked for things to, you know, clean automobiles or whatever, everything seems gimmicky these days, which I think gets sort of back to the junky society that we live in. And, you know, a lot of that is the junky society feeds on this concept of perpetual growth, which is not natural. So when you have the kind of economic model that we have in the post-Bretton Woods, post-Marshall Plan era, and the World Economic Forum says we should have a new Bretton Woods and a new Marshall Plan, then you have to have this unnatural concept of perpetual growth. And so you have to have planned obsolescence and those kinds of things. And you can't just hang on to anything. And you will notice that, you know, after about the late 1960s, we really don't have as many collector cars. And that's not just because they're not considered whatever the word is, not antiques, but, you know, we're past the 25-year mark, so we can call them collector cars. And I think a lot of that is a result of the, you know, this planned obsolescence nonsense. We didn't always do that in America. And even past, you know, into the 1970s, when we got things like the exploding Pinto, we still made things better in general, I suppose. But, you know, there were different motives going on. Satisficing was something that came, I think, largely from the technocratic World War II effort. How can we build a plane that's good enough, but good enough? And satisficing was the portmanteau that was coined to try to do that. And I think that found its way into the automotive industry into the 50s through the 60s, I would say. We were making cool things, but then again, you know, there was the petrodollar era and big, big changes in the 70s. And so the automobile industry started to reflect those internal changes, a lot of them sort of economic and control oriented. You think of guys like Henry Kissinger, for example, you know, and the things that he is reputed to have said along those lines, controlling oil, controlling food, controlling people, that kind of stuff. And, you know, the alleged energy crisis of the 70s and those kinds of things, which were getting, once again, you know, bad guys, the Club of Rome kind of contingent threatening us with the threat of things like global warming and energy crisis and water crisis and things. It's really interesting, you know, when you have centralized water, you know, I've talked about how when you stop and think, certain things have consequences. Guys like Neil Postman talked about this. You know, technology doesn't just add, you know, it has consequences. There, you know, it adds and it takes away. So, you know, the technology of centralized things, centralized water, for example, if someone's on a well, then, you know what, they probably don't care too much about what other people are doing. And, you know, when everyone's on central water, look what happens in places like California. Central power, same thing. What is happening with all of these devices and things? And you know what? We can monitor your use and blah, blah, blah. Where is all that headed? You know, what was it? 15 years ago now that we were talking on this network about how Google and Microsoft were competing to see who was going to be the manager, whose software was going to be reign supreme in the Internet of Things, who was going to regulate all of those smart devices, who's going to regulate your smart home. Where's all of that headed, that central command and control stuff? Stick around, we'll be right back.
Folks, we're living in a world the likes of which we've never perceived any clearer than we do now. The plan for global governance has been in the works for generations and would have likely been achieved by now, but for the fact that the globalists left open their Achilles heel. With all their tools, Federal Reserve System, fiat currency, No Child Left Behind, and then Common Core education introduced to our schools to dumb us down, vaccines, pharmaceuticals to lobotomize us, GMO foods, insertion of compromised or bought and paid for politicians, judges, mainstream media propaganda, all pieced together like a puzzle designed to ultimately bring the world under submission. But with all their strategy, they forgot one thing: knowledge. And knowledge is power. With knowledge, their bombardment is nullified. Folks, with that, as brilliant and knowledgeable as you've become, among the wisest audience of any radio audience in the world, and you are, I want you to take a moment to reflect and ask yourself, how much of that knowledge did I obtain from Republic Broadcasting Network? How high has my consciousness been raised since I've been a listener? How fast am I now able to discriminate truth from fake news by being a Republic Broadcasting listener? How clear am I now able to see the world since I've been listening to RBN? Ask yourselves those questions, folks. Then ask yourself, what is that knowledge worth to me? Like my morning coffee, how would I survive without it? A voice of truth in a sea of lies. Do we not all need to make sure it survives? Like public broadcasting, we are now finding we can only survive with listener support. Censorship, advertisers being attacked, truth itself being attacked. It's the only way through this. We at Republic Broadcasting humbly ask you to become a supporter. Look at your budget and make a determination of what Republic Broadcasting is worth to you and what you can afford on a monthly basis. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and pledge 20, 30, 40, 50, if possible, 100 a month or more if it's affordable. Click the donate button and become a regular monthly donor. Assure both us and yourself that Republic Broadcasting truth will continue to flow like that morning coffee. The network thanks you.
Is your property a financial burden and causing you grief? Have you tried to sell but can't find buyers? Or are you just too busy to sell your property? Don't worry. We have the right solution for you. We buy properties as is, with cash, close in 30 days, and pay all closing costs. Our service is ideal for property owners who are in pre-foreclosure, have high-end repair costs, experiencing financial hardship, going through costly divorces, are relocating, need cash for retirement, suffering family loss, or have tax liens. Whatever your situation may be, we can help you sell your property and get the money you need. If you own a single-family home or multiple family units, call us for a free consultation at 888-910-1037. That's 888-910-1037. Or visit our website at cashingproperty.com. That's cashingproperty.com. Sell your property fast and leave all your worries behind.
Sunday, Monday, happy days. Tuesday, Wednesday, happy days. Thursday, Friday, happy days. The weekend comes, my cycle hums, ready to race to you. These days are ours.
Happy days.
These days are ours. Share them with me. These days are ours.
Happy days.
These days are ours.
Welcome back. You know, this is indelicate, but I'm just going to I'm going to do it. Most of America is full of baloney. And that's a discreet way of putting it. But it's real interesting. And speaking of this whole idea of technocratic nonsense and this Bernaysian sales pitch that we've been given, you know, coming through the 20th century in particular, it wasn't always like this. And it wasn't always like this through the 20th century. I mean, I would say the World War II generation, in my estimation, was the last generation in America that had its feet planted firmly on the ground. Sure, they were misled in ways, but they and their parents were of a different caste, you know, a different mold. I know a number of their children who are very hardworking folks, but you know, I asked someone recently, so what do you think? You know, reflecting on your own history, you know, my generation, for example, looking at their parents, we you know, look at our parents and the boomers and say, you know, your parents, you know, look at this person in your parents' generation and then look at, you know, someone in their parents' generation. And my, you know, the way that I see it, these boomer folks are very hardworking folks, obviously. But, you know, the person in this conversation I was having, I was saying, you know, this person that we both know is a very hardworking person, probably, you know, could outwork any four or five people today. And yet that person couldn't outwork this person, you know, in his parents' generation, couldn't outwork that person on his best day. And it's interesting, you know, again, getting back to the implications these things have, you know, I've talked, for example, you know, speaking of centralized stuff and free things and whatever, when we're forced to get insurance, it's interesting what that does to people mentally. When you buy an automobile on credit and you're only paying a few hundred dollars for it, you don't actually own it. When we were younger in this country, our parents and grandparents used to tell us, you work hard for something, you buy it, you own it. That gives you pride of ownership and a sense of ownership that's different than when you're driving a $50,000, $60,000, $70,000 automobile on a few hundred dollars a month. It's different. And in the same sense, when you have this insurance that, say, is comprehensive coverage for, you know, a few extra dollars, then you're driving this expensive piece of equipment that you don't actually own, and you really don't have much liability per se if it's damaged. And so that creates a mindset and behavior in people that I would say is anomalous, as compared to, you know, if you were forced to buy a $70,000 automobile outright and self-insure, for example, you probably wouldn't drive the same way. I know most people wouldn't. You probably wouldn't park in the same places. Instead of parking up front, you'd probably park somewhere way in the back, or maybe in the next lot somewhere, if, you know, when you went to the grocery store or whatever. And in the same sense, those folks that used to have to work to survive, quite literally, you know, this whole stimulus nonsense is like a gateway drug. And it's not going to lead anywhere good. So I'll talk more about that when we come back. Stick around.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Thank you. Extendivite 7-herb formulation is approved to help maintain cardiovascular health and help lower blood lipid levels in adults. Extendivite is made from hawthorn, garlic, valerian, cayenne, bilberry, ginkgo biloba, and milk thistle. The herbs in Extendivite have been chosen for their ability to help with overall health. Many people have reported improved energy and stamina in just a few months. If you think you could feel just a little bit better, then Extendivite may just be for you. Extendivite is an all-natural supplement. Extendivite is only $69.95 for a 2-month supply. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com. That's HEARTDROP.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2 today.
Tired of being lied to by mass media? It's growing more and more apparent today that news is received less and less through standard media outlets. Even with a growing audience every day, RBN is beginning to direct more efforts into social media. Social media and the use of the internet is fast becoming the primary source of people for news, regardless of demographic. RBN has set out to provide some of the best news on the internet through republicbroadcasting.org, and also has begun to use the tools to our advantage by way of social media. Republic Broadcasting is now operating a Facebook page to function as yet another avenue to have our collective voice reach new audiences across not only America, but across the globe as well. The Facebook page features not only news, but also an RBN player to listen to our broadcast. Get involved by visiting facebook.com/republicbroadcasting and liking our page and share it with your friends and family, because you can handle the truth.
Welcome back. So, you know, most people don't think about this stuff. You probably know what I'm talking about, but you know, these kinds of shifts, you know, again, I mean, from the turn of the 20th century, the shift from individualism to collectivism, it has consequences. And it's interesting how you know, the little lies that we tell ourselves to rationalize these changes away. I was having a conversation with a guy recently, and he says, you know, I have this friend, local farmer. He goes out, you know, and this guy says, you know, goes out every morning to milk the cows at 5. And I joked and said, if he goes out at 5, he's late. And, Gary Cooper, you know, some people know. I mean, Derry Brownfield knew. Gary Cooper used to joke about that once in a while. You know, that was the reason that he left his family's farm, because, you know, getting up in a sub-zero, you know, getting up in sub-zero weather, going out at 4 a.m. to milk the cows wasn't fun. So Gary Cooper found another line of work, obviously. But those were the days when you got up and you got out to work so that you could survive. There weren't all of these government programs and things. And it's interesting how we're encouraged to believe that somehow this is going to save us. We're not actually hearing that right now, but certain enclaves of society are hearing that and have been for some time. You know, guys like Thomas Sowell talk about how insidious that narrative, that false narrative is. Candace Owens is one of the younger folks who can see generations. You know, she talks about her grandfather and what a hardworking guy he was, is, I believe he's still alive, and the difference, you know, and what this narrative does. And when you think about it, we all have certain proclivities. We are all, you know, somewhat weak, somewhat fallible. And so given the choice, and again, you know, I can hear Larkin, Texas reminding us that the probabilists, you know, they know that, you know, in the absence of certainty, probability will do. And so in this context, what is the probability? The probability is if you don't have to get up and you don't have to go to work to survive, then yeah, you probably won't. And then what consequences does that have? In time, it makes people softer. And it's a very insidious process. And sometimes it's the most well-intentioned, the most well-meaning people. You know, speaking of those folks, hardworking folks, a couple generations ago, a few generations ago, whatever, a lot of those folks said, you know, you watch the movies, for example, that had that message coming, you know, through the World War II, post-World War II era in particular. And they were usually, you know, some kind of a historical narrative where the children were supposed to go off to college. You know, those movies in the 40s, 50s, even into the 60s in particular, pushing the college narrative. Look how smart you are. One of my favorites is McClintock. And that scene, we should play that scene between John Wayne and George Washington McClintock and Stephanie Powers' daughter. And what he says to her, you know, I know how mother can be. How mother can be? Well, you know, she can be so petulant at times. And John Wayne says, you know, petulant, Becky? And explains when she was growing, you know, when she was a baby, her mom stayed with her in like 8 feet of snow while he drove 500 head of cattle south so that, you know, they could avoid the harsh climate. And he said, I think 300 survived. And then there was the time that they, you know, the great Comanche raids, they fought off 500 Comanche warriors for 9 days or something like that. And so he says, petulant, Becky, like you have no idea what you're talking about, young lady. So, and I think then he said, that's when he says, you know, go on home. Something like that. So that generation of folks who were the hardest working, last to have their feet on terra firma, I would say, was saying, we don't want our children to, you know, we want our children to have a better life than we had. And you know, so that's where the college conversation enters. Obviously, you can have a better education and that will afford you more opportunities, and it stands to reason to a certain extent. Certainly before we all realized what was actually going on at these institutions, the Ivy League in particular, And so, you know, you can see how it would make sense. I want my child to have a better life. Who doesn't want their child to have a better life? Of course. But what does that mean and what does that entail? And to a large extent, I think it translated to less hardy, less rugged, less self-reliant. Not entirely, maybe in subtle, even seemingly imperceptible sort of ways, but still different. More collectivist in nature. And then, you know, we get to the next generation and maybe the next generation after that. And where are we then? Almost entirely not self-reliant. Look what's going on these days. You look at products and things. You know, again, speaking of the way things used to be, you used to be able to get parts for things. Anything. And you could repair your own or even make your own in some cases. These days, that's becoming more and more difficult. China is great at some things. Copying things is something that they're fantastic at. But making a product that, you know, endures from age to age seems to have gone the way of the Ming Dynasty. I don't know. Maybe it's just me. Maybe that's part of the manufactured crisis as well. But when we used to make things here in America, it seems like we had more pride of ownership and quality was higher. It seems that I've had this conversation with a lot of different people in a lot of different walks of life. There was a guy who used to be a finance manager at a pretty high profile car dealership in the Spokane area. He and I had this conversation once, and he was trying to say that cars are made better these days, and in ways they are. And he was arguing, you know, the safety standards and things like that. And that's great, but that's a separate issue. And this idea of planned obsolescence, you know, engines in some cases do run longer, but you can find some of those old, you know, speaking of Chevy, you can find some of those old 350s that it wasn't uncommon for them to run for 300,000 miles back in the 70s, for example. I had a truck that had over 300,000 miles on it at one point. It was a 75 Chevy half-ton pickup. So, and that wasn't unusual. And that was a work truck that just had the tar beat out of it. You know, one of those three-tone. It was the old green and white and rust. So, you know, three-tone Chevy that ran forever. And transmission felt like it wanted to give out for 10 years. Just ran forever. And, you know, as guys like Scotty Kilmer have pointed out, these days everything runs on electronics. And so it's becoming more and more difficult to, you know, for the average person to get under the hood and do things that used to be fairly commonplace. You know, speaking of that old Chevy, I had an old Chevy and an old Ford. And back in those days, you know, through the 70s, for example, you used to be able to, there was so much room under the hood. It was amazing. You know, and even with an engine that size, you know, the Chevy 350 or the Ford 360, that, you know, is considerably larger than most engines these days, still a ton of room in the, you know, under the hood, almost enough room to climb under there on a rainy day and, you know, work inside there, versus the things that are happening these days, you know, with German and Japanese engineering, where apparently you have to have Japanese hands to work on just about anything anymore, if you can even do do that with the electronics and things. So it's just interesting how that change in mindset sets in motion all of these kind of this domino effect of changes, and how we tell ourselves that, you know, this isn't strange. This is perfectly normal. And I would suggest that it's not always perfectly normal. I think that if we step back, it's pretty obvious that a lot of this is intended to soften people up and make you dependent on someone or other and something or other. You know, you have to have the specific mechanic to fix the things, and you have to have the government dole to be able to afford the mechanic to fix the certain things. And, you know, speaking of Scotty Kilmer, if you haven't seen any of his videos, he's a pretty entertaining guy, but he talks, I would say, fairly candidly and honestly about things like electric vehicles and the batteries, how expensive they are. They're not necessarily better. They're a pain to maintain. They're not better for the environment. Something, you know, that Alan Watt used to remind us on the regular, how ironic. He would always chuckle in my recollection, Alan Watt, when he talked about the electric cars and how they're worse to manufacture for the environment than the regular old environment polluting petrol vehicle. And that's a whole interesting conversation. You know, speaking of which, you go back to James Corbett's Big Oil series, How and Why Big Oil Conquered the World. Most people don't realize that we had electric public transportation more than 100 years ago. And electric automobiles weren't, that's not something new to this century. Tesla, you know, Nikola Tesla was the guy who this Tesla phenomenon, I just think that's a huge bit of irony. Aren't we curious, you know, about history? I guess not. Why call it Tesla? So it's interesting, you know, the transition basically from survival. You have to get up, you know, if I get up, you know, if we want to survive, I get up today. And if I don't get up, we don't survive. Basically, we starve, we go hungry. And from there, work transitioned to kind of a hobby level. Speaking of Sunbeam Tigers, you know, that's kind of where that went. I will apply myself. I work in different areas. I don't work with my hands. I work with my brain. Because I went to college, I got a good education, which afforded me more opportunities. And so now I'm part of middle management, which eventually went away pretty quickly, didn't it? And so now I'm going to apply that same work ethic in a hobby kind of application. I'm going to work on my Sunbeam Tiger on the weekends. And even that has sort of gone away. How many fathers are working on classic cars with sons, for example? You know, how many this one will get me in trouble. How many mothers are teaching their daughters how to sew? And before people get excited, my dad learned from his mom, who was a master seamstress, how to sew. My dad could sew anything, and he did in many cases. Sewed his own curtains, sewed all kinds of stuff. And, you know, so that was something that I wish that I had gotten from his mom and or from him. You know, my dad had an enviable collection of sewing machines and paraphernalia. So I'm not being chauvinistic or misogynistic at all. But I am being a little facetious. It's Monday. We should start with a sense of humor, I think. So, but interesting guy, interesting generation. My dad was fairly unique, you know, guy who could tell you about just about every firearm under the sun and sew you a really nice set of curtains at the same time. How many people can you say that about? Anyway, we'll be right back. Stick around. More right after this break.
You gonna wait till the cows come home to get your new Ease-Off drop-in lift?
What in the world is an Ease-Off drop-in lift?
Our Ease-Off is a new tool to increase production for your meat processing company that will get that whole hog or half a beef on or off your rail with our remote control.
That sounds great, but can I afford it?
Sure, and the Ease-Off installs fast. The effortless operation will reduce fatigue, speed up your line, and increase profits.
Okay, I'm convinced. Where can I get my Ease-Off?
Go to easeoff.com. That's EAZEOFF.com. And hurry, because we're offering free shipping for a limited time. Easeoff.com. We make pigs fly. Cows, too.
Ease-Off, LLC, 417-932-6419.
For over 20 years now, Extendivite has proven time and again, it really works. Here is a testimonial from Amazon.com. I received an arterial switch at birth. In my mid-20s, I started getting slight runs of NSVT. Nothing too serious, but enough to cause worry. I started taking Extendivite a little over 2 years ago, and it helped cut the palpitations and NSVT down drastically. This isn't a cure-all supplement. I strongly recommend a good diet and exercise to aid in any heart troubles you may be having, and I strongly recommend giving Extendivite a try. Extendivite is only $69.95 for a two-month supply. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com. That's HEARTDROP.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Ladies and gentlemen, J.R. Moore here. We have a special promotion going on at Republic Broadcasting. This is a fundraiser for Republic Broadcasting involving the Energy Planner. Mail me a postcard. My address is at my website at thelibertyman.com. We pick a postcard every other Thursday. When your postcard is drawn out, you get to buy an Energy Planner for $215 instead of $285, $70 discount. $200 goes to Republic Broadcasting. You also get a 10% discount on my mattress pads. So get those postcards in, put your name, your telephone number, your email address on there, and when your postcard is drawn, you get to get an Energy Planner for $215 instead of $285. Mattress pads, 10% off. Help us out at Republic Broadcasting and help yourself to get an Energy Planner at a deep discount. It's a win-win situation for everybody. We hope you can get these postcards in soon. Thank you very much.
Welcome back. Can you imagine having the Sunbeam with the 289 in it? That would be fun to own. I know I had a friend down in California who had one that was pretty awesome. So just to sort of conclude the thought there, it's interesting. I don't know. What do you think? Am I sort of misremembering history? I think of this generation didn't really complain much. And I think of my grandfather, for example, my dad's dad, who, by my recollection, just got up and went to work. You know, he and my grandmother owned and operated a laundromat in small town Montana for more than 30 years, and they just did it. It wasn't, you know, it was just what they did. And they didn't complain. They didn't, you know, there were never any issues. It was amazing. I mean, to see their work ethic in action, it was so, I don't know, understated, I guess, that it was entirely unassuming. And the power of it, I think, was lost, certainly on me, and I would say generally on my generation. But, you know, and now you listen to guys like Simon Sinek talking about millennials and how I need to make a difference. Well, you know what? Just show up and you will make a difference. Like my grandfather used to say, you know, stick and stay, it's bound to pay. Just show up. That will make a difference. And there is this difference in mindset. You know, there's all of this politics and all of these other things. And there was a humility that we lost somewhere along the way. And I think a lot of it has to do, again, with what I was talking about last week, you know, simulacra and simulation, this shift away from reality by degrees. And just showing up, just putting in an honest day's work, there's something to that. And something very profound. And in addition to that, I think that sort of correlates to doing what we say we're going to do. And that's a big deal that we've lost sight of in the Bernaysian and post-Bernaysian era. Just doing what you say you're going to do, which is sort of where I was going earlier, and I'm going to come back to that, I think, in the second hour. It's profound, the consequences that has. And so we'll talk about that a little bit in the second hour. Coming up right after this short break. Stick around. I'll be right back.
Here at Republic Broadcasting Network, we have been building our online store. While we have been focusing on bringing you the best talk show host in the country, here at Republic Broadcasting Network, we also want our listeners to have products they can use every day and in times of emergency. We have added new products each week to our store. Your support of this network, plus products at the best prices, is a win-win situation. Check out our new store. Go to our website, republicbroadcasting.org, and click on the online store located at the top of our website. Together, we can continue to grow RBN and help our listeners prepare for the future. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and click on our online store or call us.
800-724-2719, extension 3. 800-724-2719, extension 3.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.